Okay, gang, we are back live again with Cali King. We were just bragging about all the technology that we were just getting figured out, and then she hangs up on me. I don't understand this. So I'm hoping she has a really good excuse, like a bad storm, or she tripped and fell, or I don't know. But we understand that there's also hang-ups with technology anyway, so I will forgive you for hanging up on me.
Yeah, no good excuses. I wish I had a better story, but either it was a random iPhone glitch or it was in my excitement of talking, I was rubbing a phone against my cheek and hit the off button. I don't know which it was.
There you go. Well, either way, it's good to be back. It's going to be a pain in the butt in post-production, but that's okay. We'll get it figured out. So, So you were talking about the planning that's involved with putting together the courses, and you were saying that folks have lifetime access then after the courses are completed?
Yeah. Once someone joins, they have lifetime access, and they can join in on as many of the future sessions as they want to. And one of the main reasons that I did that is talking about technology. As I get better at technology, we're constantly upping the video quality. We're adding different elements, even like elements for engagement, little quizzes and stuff. So, you know, it just seems fair that when someone joins the course, they get those future additions so that they can keep coming back through it. And it's, you know, it's usually a little something new each time that we run the course, but that's what's continued to build them and make them grow, not just in terms of the amount of content, but also in the quality and the different elements that I'm able to start pulling into it for engaging those different learning styles.
Gotcha. So the new things that you're adding to it are those things that pop up as issues or challenges as you're going through the original program, or how do the changes get factored in there?
Yeah, they often are. Sometimes it's just an idea that I have of, you know, oh, I wonder if I could show it this way. Like, for example, you know, we were talking about what is correct bending, and, you know, we just have the camera sitting on the ground, and I got the idea, well, what if we brought a ladder in here and had Ken, our camera guy, climb on top of the ladder and hang the camera out over top of the horse? You know, we could get a different kind of a shot to show that. So we redid the video and added in that footage.
Gotcha.
And he was able to stay balanced on the ladder. It was a little precarious, but
that's why women live longer than men, just saying.
Probably true.
And now, yeah. I saw a shot the other day. Well, of course, the other day for me could have been 10 years ago. That's just one of my expressions, I guess, the other day. But I saw a graphic or a photo that you had done, and it had a little caption with it, something about using a drone to do some filming.
Yes. Yeah, that is the newest thing. We haven't gotten past, I would say, the experimentation phase with that.
Okay.
But, you know, that's, again, one of the things about working with other people that are constantly improving. Ken, who does my video, he's constantly kind of upping his game in what he produces and how he teaches and also tells stories through video. So he got this drone and he brought it over here the other day. And the first step was just desensitizing the horses to it. As he was learning to fly it, which was a little interesting, we have one good shot that one of these days we got to edit it out and post it on social, because I was cantering across the field and it's supposed to be like, you know, this little beauty shot. And he tries to bring the drone in closer, but he's still kind of new of flying it. So he brings it in and he looks at his little screen to fly it, and he realizes that he's coming right towards me and my horse is here's this thing that sounds like a, you know, 10-pound bumblebee coming at her, and she's starting to jump around, and instead of pulling it backwards, he pulled it down, so it's still about 5 feet away from us, but now it's flying down to her feet. And of course, the video is still on, so that was an interesting shot, but yes, we are working on incorporating drone footage.
That's wild. Talk about a learning curve, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. So So one of the questions that I've always been curious about since learning about these online courses, and now especially with you talking about how you change the courses and you tweak them, and you've got so much planning that goes into these, and all of the different learning components that go with it. What do you do when you're running into a student that has a challenge that is completely outside of the box or off of the lesson plan, so to speak?
Yeah, well, that's why, I mean, right now all of the courses have a very personal element to it. So, I mean, we've got a lot of different ways that they can reach out to me if I'm instructing the course or the other instructors that teach the courses. And, I get them help, whether it is showing them something during the Q&A that addresses their particular challenge, whether it's jumping on the phone, sending an email. Because to me, if I have someone that has a challenge or has something that is they're not, getting the result from what I've already put out there, to me that's an opportunity for me to improve what I'm teaching. It's maybe it's something that I've missed, maybe it's something that I didn't explain well. I like so one of my mentors, and he teaches some of the courses too, Angelo Tillotine. He told me during a lesson the one time that if you tell someone something 3 times and they don't understand it, you have to change the way that you're teaching it. So when a student isn't learning, it's not the fault of the student, it's the fault of the teacher. And I really try to kind of keep that close to heart. So again, when I have someone that's got a challenge that doesn't, fit the mold, so to speak, of what we're presenting in the course, it's an opportunity to make that course better because there's always someone else out there that's going to have that same challenge.
Right. Perfect. So you've got your plan, and yet you still have it, want to say loose enough or free flowing enough that you can kind of go with the flow and help as things come up that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Because
Absolutely.
that's always been a challenge to me, and it's been one of my setbacks for not planning any sort of official courses or anything online, is what do you do when things crop up and you have to say, oh, well, sorry, we don't have time to cover that. We have to move on. So that's great. So then with the going back to the courses that you're talking about with the enrollment periods and the live interaction and that sort of thing, is there a time limit on those as far as the live courses go?
No, there's not. So any of the live sessions, we record, and we put the recordings up for students to access. And the recordings stay up, so they have access to them basically as long as they want to. Also, everything that's in the courses is downloadable. So, we've got some folks that are in places that don't have good enough internet to just stream videos. So they can go in, they can download the videos, and then they can keep them. Some people download them all to like a hard drive, and then they've kind of got the whole course right there in, kind of a physical copy.
Okay. And they can only do that though for those larger courses if they've enrolled within the enrollment periods, right? They're not able to so I wouldn't be able to go access that information from, say, a course that you did last year, or could I?
Yeah, correct. So it's just people that have enrolled in the course that have access to it. So, once they enroll, they've pretty much got access to everything. But as far as someone that hasn't enrolled yet, we've got the free videos up, and we've got several small courses that are, kind of like previews so people can get a better feel for the teaching style and, a little bit how the online courses run.
Okay, so you have the interactive courses you said twice a year?
Yeah, so right now we're kind of building out, I'll say, kind of a suite of courses. So I have the balanced writing course, which is the one that I teach. It's the one that I started with, and it's kind of the biggest, most comprehensive one. But it's the one where I really go into horse behavior and the different elements that come into good horsemanship, everything from care of the horse to riding, to working with an instructor. So that one runs twice a year. And then I do one called Training Journals, which is where I basically film the training sessions that I'm doing with the horses here. And I have horses that come in for all kinds of varieties of issues or, you know, things that need worked on. So we film those sessions and put them in that program. And then we've got another one that is kind of like a sports psychology course. So I teamed up with a few different folks that work in that field, and they helped me create that program. And then Wendy teaches now two courses. She has one that runs twice a year, and she has another one that is kind of in a beta stage right now that we're still tweaking. And then there's Angelo teaches one course as well, the science of horsemanship, and that's kind of a like advanced equine behavior course. So that's what we offer right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's separate from the a la carte, or is that including the a la carte courses that you have available?
Those are some of those are a la carte. So ones that just run kind of like the college class are Balanced Riding Course and Wendy's Effortless Riding Course.
Gotcha.
And the rest of them are basically a la carte.
Okay. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot. That's quite a list. I'm writing all these down. That's quite a list.
Cool. We've been building them out, and you know, my goal from the beginning was to create kind of this online horse university. So, you know, going with the collaboration idea we were talking earlier, you know, starting to bring in some of just the best people from different fields in riding and horsemanship and horse care to teach all those different elements that I think are important to managing horses well and just having healthy, happy horses and being good riders.
Uh-huh. Great. So how long were you teaching riding before you, in a live sense, before you started integrating the online courses?
I was teaching for about 10 years. So it's a long time considering my age, but I honestly was like a young teenager, and I had people that were a few years younger than me that I was teaching. So I've always, you know, not been doing it 10 years in a professional sense, but always been teaching. It's just kind of something that has been, kind of come naturally to me.
Uh-huh. Okay. So then my next question is the coaching online versus coaching in person. What do you find? How do you compare them? What are some of the biggest hurdles that you find online versus in person?
Well, there's two major benefits of in person. And the first is when you're in person, you can watch the horse and rider, and you can just get that intuitive sense, plus that benefit of just being there watching them, of what you need to address first. And that can be, I get that from a video, and I can get that sometimes even just from talking with them on the phone. But there is something to being in person when you can, you know, take the feel of that horse's reins and feel what that person is actually feeling, when you can, you know, put your hand on that person's leg and feel, like, you know, physically feel where the tension is. And that leads into the second benefit of working in person is we have this proprioception thing. You know, we think that we are straight, or we think that we're bringing our leg back, or we think that we're, changing the position of our back, but it's not actually necessarily what the person is saying, what the instructor is saying, or what the picture is that we're looking at. So it's really helpful to have someone that can actually, you know, put their hands on you and say, like, this is the feeling. This is what it feels like when your leg's in this position, or when your back's in this position, you know, or when the horse is doing this. I mean, that's one of the big things that I'd like to stress is I feel that my role kind of through this online education is absolutely to support local instructors. So it's not to replace local instructors. It's not to say, you know, you need to stop taking lessons here because you're taking this class. It's not that at all. It's to help people use those other modes of learning, get access or get information to knowledge that maybe they don't have locally. But it's really to build on or to help fill in some gaps of what they are working on with a local instructor or, you know, with a clinician. It's not at all to necessarily replace that.
So it's more supplemental education that can help to enhance the other information that they're getting from their other instructors or clinicians or coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have people in all different situations, you know, like, for example, Mihu in Abu Dhabi doesn't have a lot of other instructors at all that he can work with. And I've got a lot of people that are in that situation that they're maybe in remote areas and they simply don't have somebody to work with, or they don't have somebody that they're comfortable working with. So they use the online courses just to, you know, do it on their own, basically. But then we've also got a lot of people that have a regular coach, a regular instructor that they work with, and they use these videos to supplement. And they'll even take, I mean, one of the things that makes me the happiest is when I'll have someone that, you know, sends me an email and they'll say, hey, I watched this video, took this exercise, I took it to my lesson, and, you know, my instructor helped me work through it, and I realized that this happened, you know, but we were wondering about this extra piece. You know, my horse was still doing this. What could we do next? And that's what I really love, because, again, it's that collaboration. Now that local instructor is helping the person on the ground, but I can help them with, you know, maybe some new ideas to try.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
That's great. And I could see how that can help a lot of coaches in person then, a lot of their live coaches, because I'm sure, you know, there's the idea of kind of lessons potentially getting stale, maybe because the students aren't thinking far enough ahead, or the coach is kind of running into sort of a personal stalemate with where to go next and things like that with the horse and the rider. So that's a great way to give them access to some other pieces, even just food for thought then, that would potentially open new doors so they maybe could be asking better questions to their coaches and their trainers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually one of the areas that we cover in the balance riding course specifically. We've got a whole little module, a little section on that. And I just tried to give people some ideas or even some basic scripts for when they're going to their riding instructor with a new idea, how to say it that it doesn't create defensiveness in that person, or it doesn't sound like they're challenging what they're learning from them, but that they're more just asking for their feedback or their help with this new idea. Because that's one of the main concerns that people have, is they don't want to offend their instructor by,
sure,
you know, them knowing that they're going somewhere else. And I find that a lot of instructors and coaches, if they're approached the right way, you know, even if it is a instructor that, you know, maybe the students view them as being kind of hard-headed or like they're going to be stubborn about a new idea, if they're approached the right way, you know, you can really get some valuable feedback from that person, and you can often get them to help you try something different, you know, when you present it the right way.
Well, that makes a ton of sense. And I can see what you mean, you know, where sometimes coaches can get offended if they feel like you're trying to learn from other people, things like that. I've been lucky enough to never find that with any of my own coaches. And I know I encourage students to ride with as many different coaches and clinicians and teachers and trainers as possible. But, you know, it's easy to see from a teacher perspective how ego can get a little bit in the way. And I don't even mean ego in a negative way, you know, but the coach or the teacher has kind of the plan set in mind, and they want the student to follow that as closely as possible. So sometimes it can throw little hiccups in the way, you know, when they're thinking about other things or kind of going down these little rabbit trails, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's awesome. So you've got a whole course on basically communicating with your instructor.
It's, you know, it's a little piece of one of the other bigger courses, but it's one of the things that we try to do is, you know, again, that came out of a question that people were constantly asking me is, you know, I love this idea or I love this exercise, but in my lessons, I'm afraid to bring it up because I don't know how my instructor is going to react to it. You know, so I started saying, well, why don't you just, you know, say it this way, ask them, you know, instead of saying, well, this person told me to do it this way, you know, this blonde girl from the United States told me to put my leg this way. you know, I said, why don't you just say, you know, could you take my leg and put it in the position that you want it to be in? And, you know, I've seen pictures of this kind of a leg position, or I've seen pictures of horses that move this way. You know, what do you think about that? Why, you know, why could you explain what that means or what that looks like? And then it opens a conversation and you can start, you know, start just opening that person up and kind of bringing out how they feel about things and why they're doing things a certain way. And that's a good way to start incorporating some new ideas.
Right. And the open dialogue like that is better for the student and for the teacher anyway, because I feel like that would put them both at ease for allowing maybe, you know, little mistakes, little setbacks, allowing trial and error, allowing, you know, plenty of things that are pretty important in the learning stages.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool. So I guess that would be one of the great things. So we were talking about the hurdles involved with the coaching online versus in person, but I guess we could say that there's also then big bonuses for the online coaching versus the in person, because you can have little discussions like that set you up for success with your, you know, personal coaching then.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you mentioned this earlier, but asking the right questions is so important. And sometimes we just need a little bit of new information or a different perspective to be able to ask a different question. And I've found in my own experience that even if I'm, you know, riding with an instructor, a clinician, and I've ridden with them a lot, and maybe things are starting to feel a little bit stale or feel a little bit repetitive in the lessons, if I can get some new information and just ask them better questions, I can suddenly pull such, you know, wisdom out of that person that I just needed to ask that right question in order to bring that out.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So this little module piece that you have about talking to your instructor, what course is that in? Is that in one of the a la carte courses, or is that in one of the live enrollment courses?
It's in one of the live enrollment courses. It's in the balanced riding course.
The balanced riding course. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Fantastic. Because I'm sure there's listeners out there that are curious about that. So that's great. And we've got, let's see, we've got some questions actually coming in. If you wouldn't mind taking a couple questions.
Sure.
Okay. Awesome. One of the questions, actually, Chris has got two questions in here. And for anybody else who's out there listening, who's curious and wants to submit some questions, you can do that at this point. But Chris asks first, how many students do you have in an online class?
Most of the online classes, like when they run, will have anywhere from 30 to 80 students on average. So that's, you know, kind of a big range. Mm-hmm. But it depends on the time of year. Our spring courses are always a little bit fuller than the fall classes. And we do often cap them. So, you know, if it starts getting much above 80, we'll usually cap them and, you know, and send people into the next enrollment period or just close enrollment a little bit early so that we can keep the right level to be able to have that good personal engagement like we were talking about.
Gotcha. Okay. And because this is online, it's very different. You know, I know I've taught some clinics where we cap our numbers, but these are live clinics that we're capping. So when you're getting 30 or 40 or even 80 people in a class for this, it's not like they're in an arena and they're bumping into each other or anything like that. They've got quite a bit of access to you directly then with their questions and that sort of thing. And being that they can access you directly through through their online avenues, it's much easier there, I would think, than having a large live class, right?
Yes. Yeah, it definitely is, because even even the simple factor of when we do some of the live components, for one, they're always recorded, so people can send in early questions and watch the recording later, you know, because of time zone things.
Gotcha.
But usually the people that end up live on that call, we try to schedule the times of the calls with a little bit of variation, so we get people from different time zones that end up in the different calls. And from doing the courses for, you know, a few years now, I've kind of found there is that sweet spot for the number.
Okay.
A few times I ran a course with a really small number of people, you know, like 10 folks in it.
Okay.
And I found that there was actually a lot of magic to having that just a little bit bigger group, because you can start to get more of, again, like we were talking about earlier, the people's different expertise, even if it's not related directly to horses, but other expertise that they pull in and that they can contribute to the group, that's really a benefit of that size.
Gotcha. Okay. So then with the larger group, because of the different varieties of backgrounds and things like that, you're going to be going back to what we talked about, being able to word your questions or ask the questions in a different way. You're going to have a bigger variety of the questions that are being asked. So I would assume then that people are going to learn just as much from the variety of questions as what they're going to learn from, or maybe almost as much as what they're going to learn from the course content itself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And everyone has different styles. I mean, it's just like if, you know, you remember back to when you were actually in class, you know, like in high school, and there's people that sit in the front row and just are constantly asking questions, and there's people that sit in the back and, you know, just sit there and take it in. And it's not always an indicator of how much that person is learning or retaining. You know, we have different styles. Like, some people are very active, some people are a little bit more passive in how they learn. So even with an online course, there'll always be some folks that are really asking a ton of questions, sending in tons of videos, really active. And then there's other people that stay pretty quiet, but, you know, I hear from them later on that they got the same benefits. It was just they're a little bit more of a little bit more passive in how they interact with the information.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. So, okay. So I'm going to ask the question, which student were you in class? Were you in the front? Were you in the back? Because I know I was hiding in the back corner. I won't lie.
I was the back corner student too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually, my friends like to tease me about this all the time, because in social situations, I am the quietest person. I mean, I just like to sit there and listen. But, and then I'm on these videos and I'm there like chattering away on these videos, and they just think it's hilarious because, you know, when they knew me growing up or they know me from just being out at, you know, parties or family gatherings, I'm always the quiet person.
Interesting. Isn't it interesting how teaching and how horses really change a lot of us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. I think it's actually one of the things that has really fascinated me about studying behavior, you know, from a training perspective and looking at horse behavior and how I can change horses' behaviors. My favorite kind of type of training horse to work with is the ones that come in that are just really a challenge. You know, like they've got stuff going on, behaviors going on that just seem really off the wall or really hard to figure out. But I love working with those kinds of horses because I find that our basic brain structures for humans and for horses are the same. You know, we all have a brain stem. We all have the midbrain, the limbic system area. You know, humans have a bigger frontal cortex. We can think abstractly and think into the future and into the past and all that. But the basic brain systems are the same. So to me, behavior, like what truly drives our everyday behavior, habits, those are the same, whether you're a horse or a human or a dog. So I just find that I've learned so much about myself and about the way that I behave from the work that I've done with the horses.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. That makes a lot of sense.
There's so much about horses that we can, we can gain and that we can learn, I think, about ourselves. And people look at it on different levels. And I'm such a sciencey person that, I like to think of it in a behavior context, but there's just so much we can learn from horses.
For sure. For sure. So another question that Chris has sent in, what is the cycle for the college type courses? So this would be the online enrollment courses. I think basically she's talking about the starting periods for these courses. What do you have for those?
Yeah, so balanced riding course runs in the spring and the fall. Usually in the spring it's May. In the fall it is the last week of August was our enrollment period, and now we're in, I think, lesson two of balanced riding course. Wendy Murdoch's effortless rider course, which is also one of the big, runs like a college class, that one's going to be starting up first week of October will be the enrollment. Okay. And then, that's all that we've got on the books for this year. We don't really have specific dates for our 2018 schedule yet, but we'll have those in a month or two.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. That's awesome. I'm loving this, and I would say that you're definitely piquing my interest in looking into more of the online learning stuff. I've been doing some of my, I joke and call them my almost daily question and answer sessions, where folks will submit questions, and I just basically sit on the couch at the hotel or sit on a chair at the hotel room and answer a question live. But you've got me intrigued with this idea of doing some of the online courses. So I think you and I might have to chat a little bit about that and about maybe putting something together like that. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I would love to. I know you would be fantastic at it because you're great on video, and I recognize how difficult that can be. At least for me, it was very difficult. I'm not a natural video person, but you do a great job of just putting concepts together and explaining them in a logical order. And I think the fact that you sit on your couch in the hotel after a busy day of teaching and do that is fantastic, because I usually spend, like an hour sitting there outlining, doing little mind maps, thinking of all these ideas. I'm always impressed by people like yourself that can just stream it out there, and it sounds great.
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't know about sounding great. Thank you. I think you're just being too nice about that. But, it's interesting to me, too, because it goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning, how it's not something that we really learned much about to begin with. So we kind of wing it and fake it till we make it, so to speak, and things like that. But I found I really enjoy working with the online stuff. I really enjoy setting up the camera, and like I said, my setups are so very basic, just crazy basic, crazy simple as far as how I set them up. And so it's a point and shoot and roll with it and go with whatever happens. It's a little intimidating to me, I won't lie, setting up and planning the longer courses like what you're talking about. But at the same time, I really like this idea of kind of the live group interaction sort of thing. So you got me curious. Yeah. I think we're going to talk about that. Yeah.
Good. It's such a benefit when, to add to what you're already doing with your busy clinic schedule, because when someone can go to a clinic and they have that day or those few days of learning, but then when they have something to actually take home and continue from that, mm-hmm. It's such a benefit. I mentioned habit earlier, but there's the real change, learning becomes actionable when we can start to create habits and actually start to do things, not just take in information and know something. We have have to actually practice it to apply it. And that's one of the things that you can definitely do with kind of providing people that support through, again, technology and what the online world lets us do is provide the support for creating the habits that actually make the big changes in someone's horse or someone's riding.
Right, right. Well, and having the access to the courses after they've taken them, you know, to the videos and to the, you know, potentially the lectures and things like that, I think would be great for folks also. Because I know there's a lot of times in clinics, people will say, oh, can you repeat what you just said? And I say, geez, I don't even know what I just said because I was just kind of in the moment and flying with what came to me.
Yeah.
So that's,
I know the feeling.
Yeah, right, right. That's very cool. That's very cool. So so then your next course you said that's coming up is Wendy's Effortless Rider course. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. And in that course, it's kind of like the 101 for what Wendy teaches.
Okay.
And if anyone's not familiar with Wendy, you know, she is really good at helping people understand how their body works, how that works in conjunction with the horse, what good movement looks like, mm-hmm. And, you know, incorporating those exercises to, you know, daily exercises to help find that good movement. So that one's going to run in October.
In October. Okay. So is the course enrollment open for that or has that passed already?
No, that isn't open yet. What we do before we open enrollment for the course is we always put out some preview videos. So again, it lets people get a feel for what the course is about, what the instructor's teaching style is, see if it's a good match for them. So we put out the preview videos, and that'll start the first week of October. Then we'll have the enrollment. I think that's like second week of October, and then the course will start right after that.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Fantastic. Good. Well, I hope that you'll share with me or you'll send me some reminders when you start sharing that information, because I would definitely like to share that with our audience for Wendy. Wendy is definitely one of those folks that I recommend for everyone to ride with, because she is absolutely just a genius when it comes to the mechanics of the rider and how that relates to the horse and that sort of thing. So I think she's someone that everybody should ride with at some point or another. And the fact that these courses are available, I think, is just tremendous.
Yeah. Yep. I totally agree with you. I have owe a lot to Wendy. I've learned a lot from her and in my own riding and also in teaching style, because Wendy is a fabulous teacher as well.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so if you don't mind then, I have some wrap-up questions that I'd like to run by you. These are just kind of quick, off-the-cuff sort of things that, you know, because this whole other conversation we've had has just been so scripted with the hanging up on me and all of that fun stuff. You know? Goodness. But Callie, if there was one specific thing that you could recommend for riders to focus on as a primary means of improving their horsemanship, what would that be?
Say that one more time while I think about it.
Okay, you bet. If there was one specific thing that you could recommend for riders to focus on as a primary means of improving their horsemanship, what would that be?
I would say focus on the responses of the horse. So learn to notice the little changes in the horse, whether it's a change in the positioning of their body, whether it's a little shift in their balance, whether it is a shift in just their attention that, you know, they're holding. And as you start to learn to observe those little shifts, then when you change something about your riding, when you are trying a different position or you are, you know, applying a pressure with an aid, when you can notice those little shifts, then you start to get feedback so much quicker on what is helping the horse move in the right direction, you know, of what you want them to do and what is triggering a response that you don't want them to do. And I think when we can all notice those little shifts, we can change our approach before we're triggering, you know, what we like to call bad behavior in horses. You know, we can just notice things so much sooner and make adjustments so that we're clear in what we're asking the horse to do, or that we notice, you know, a problem that might be starting.
I love it. I love it. If you could ride with anyone, past or present, who would it be and why?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
No pressure, but everyone's intently listening right now.
I know. I've got a bunch of different names running through my head.
And you can mention a few if you want to, if that makes it easier for you.
Well, you know, one person that is on my bucket list to ride with is Mark Rashid, and he's luckily present. So, you know, I'm sure I will have the opportunity, but I love the way that the idea of that subtle shifts is something that I got from him. So his name kind of stuck in my mind. Is
okay.
He's someone I would love to ride with. And I'm just thinking, you know, another person, I'm sure this is a name that is probably one that a lot of people would mention, but, you know, Nuno Oliveira, there's something when I watch, or just, you know, mostly I've just seen still images of his riding, but he just seems to have this, like, this essence of, he just is connected to the horse in a really unique way. And I think he's someone that I would have loved to even just observe in person.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. That's awesome. So what is your personal definition of horsemanship?
You've got really good closing questions.
The tough ones.
What's funny is I listened to a lot of podcasts, and I know that there's closing questions. So I listened to one of your interviews at the end to see if I could prepare for the closing question. And I think these are new.
No way. These are the same. No? Yeah.
Oh, man, I missed them. Yeah, I think my definition of horsemanship would be getting into a mindset where the relationship with the horse is the primary focus. So it's not about what can I make the horse do. It's not about, you know, how fast can I teach him to do something, or, you know, what moves can I get him to do. But more keeping the focus on what's the relationship like. You know, how is the horse feeling around me? Am I improving his life in this moment or making it worse? And I guess to me, horsemanship is trying to make each moment that we spend with the horse better, and, you know, make it better, not worse.
I love it. That's great. That's quite a task for all of us, really. You know, so that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So this question ought to be pretty easy. How can folks find you?
The easiest way is my website, which is crktrainingblog.com.
Perfect. Perfect. And then, of course, you're on social media. I know we're connected through Facebook and through Instagram. Are there any other social media avenues you're on that I haven't thought of yet?
No, those are the most consistent. I'm on a few others, but those are the most consistent.
Gotcha. Have you started using, and this is totally not off the list, this is off the cuff right now, have you started using the whole Snapchat thing yet?
I have Snapchat. I think it is a really cool medium, but I am honestly one of these people that I try to distance myself from my phone whenever possible. When I'm going through the day, I just don't have my phone on me that often. So I'll have little moments where I'm working a horse and I'm thinking, oh, this would be a cool thing to share. But I guess it's more important for me to not have the phone and not have those little distractions.
The constant little dings and notifications and reminders, you mean?
Yes, exactly, exactly. Or even the temp, you know, I keep it on silent, but even the temptation to hit the button and look at the time, and then right. I see a text message, and it takes you down the black hole. So I think, yeah.
Suddenly
I haven't done
an hour
Snapchat
has gone
yet.
Past, and yeah.
Yes, yes.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I admit that, you know, I'm in a position now where I don't actually answer my phone very often because most of the phone calls are fielded by Dee Dee in the office, and she handles most of the emails, and by most, I mean like 99%. So mm-hmm. She's handling the phone calls and the emails and things like that, but it's the extra media, the social media and things like that, that I'm constantly getting notifications for and constantly playing with on my phone. And, you know, of course, not when I'm teaching or anything like that, but it's all the in-betweens. When you said you're mm-hmm. exactly right. You know, when you just get the pop-ups and then you go down the rabbit holes and you get the, you know, all the notifications and pretty quick an hour's gone by. And
yeah, and I know there's a statistic on it, and I wish I could remember what it actually was, but, you know, there's an idea that when we're in a focus moment, you know, like, say, working with a horse, and then you have that little distraction that comes up, it pulls your mind away for so much longer than just, you know, the 10 seconds it took to read that Facebook message. It you know, part of your brain is still thinking about that for whatever the time period is. I think it's like around 10 minutes, you know, before really? You can truly get back and focus into what you were doing. So yeah, thinking about any kind of creative work, whether it's, you know, the things that we normally think of as creative, whether it's art or writing, or, you know, to me, working a horse is a type of kind of creative work too.
Sure.
And it's, yeah, any little distraction will pull us right out of that focus, and it takes a lot of time to get back into it.
Wow. That's interesting. And I know I was reading something not too long ago, and I wish I could find it. I've been looking for the research that had gone by with it also. But it was talking about the way that the cellular waves affects our body from the phone. So basically, if you have your cell phone in your pocket, your body will pull to the direction of the cell phone. Something about the cellular waves attracting your body. So even if you've got it on one of those little bands around your boot or in a side pocket, your body will actually pull in the direction of the phone. So it's just better to not have it on you at all in the case of riding anyway, because then it's causing you to be a crooked rider.
Yeah, that's amazing. I hadn't heard that before, but I believe it. And cell phones, along with a lot of technology, but cell phones are so personal because we do have them with us so much and we rely on them so much. They're so new when we think about humankind, you know, they're so new that I think there's a lot of interesting effects that can come from where technology is going. You know, even the idea with cell phones that we're starting to have this external memory, and that, you know, we may not, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I guess it could be argued both ways, but I think there's going to be a lot of interesting effects.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Gosh. Okay. Well, speaking of rabbit trails, there, the damn cell phone got us off on a rabbit trail, didn't it?
That's pretty ironic.
Right? Gosh, we don't even have to be touching them. We just talk about it and it gets us on a rabbit trail. Gosh, there's something to be said for that, I think there's something to be said for that. So,
yes.
Okay, so then you may have noticed in some of the podcasts and maybe the videos that you've watched that I've put out there that at the end of each video or each audio, I try to ask a question of the day. And this is something that the audience gets to answer. So the folks that are listening would answer the question in the comment section, basically, of this audio. And anytime I have a guest, the guest gets to ask the question of the day.
Awesome. This is the one that I prepared for.
Oh, you prepared. Oh, that's awesome. You're the first person who's come into this prepared. I've had people, you're going to love this. I've had multiple people that I've done numerous videos with, and they always get stumped when it comes to the question of the day. Even when they've actually asked the question of the day a few times, it still throws them off guard. So I love that you're prepared. So shoot, what's our question of the day?
Well, I love to hear about people's favorite horse moment. So something that stands out. It can be recent, it can be a long time ago, but just a moment in time, whether it was like a great feeling you had when you were riding, whether it was like a breakthrough in learning, or if it was just hanging out with your horse in the field, just like a favorite horse moment that you've experienced.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I love it. Gang, what was your favorite horse moment that you've experienced? Callie wants to know. That's the question of the day. Put that in the comment section below this audio here. That'll be great. And I'll make sure Callie's checking in to read those moments. Callie, if you could hang on just one moment, I want to thank you so much for hanging out here with me and talking about horses, spending your time with myself and with our audience here. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation again, Patrick, and thank you for everyone that tuned in to listen.
Absolutely, absolutely. So just hang on just a couple minutes here, Callie, or a couple moments as I close this up, and then we'll chat a little after here. So, gang, Callie and I want to thank you for tuning in for episode number 11 of Talking About Horses. We really appreciate you giving us your ear. Please remember, if you've missed any of this broadcast, you can access it full through Facebook, very soon here through YouTube, or by streaming from iTunes. Through whatever outlet you're listening, please be sure to give us a rating, a comment, a review, and or a share. Your word of mouth is the fuel for this fire. And please tune in next week. I'm going to be interviewing Kendra Skorstad to talk about hooves and farrier issues for horse owners. Thanks so much, gang.